The best practice you learned today may not be the best practice in 5 years anymore. People that in this field, actually regardless young or old, experience or just join a profession, we all need to stay very open-minded. We need to always ready to learn and experiment and really supporting the overall innovation system in your local community and in the country and also globally.
Alice Lee is the Executive Director of the Center for Technology Licensing, or CTL, at Cornell University, and she joins us on Talking Tech Transfer to discuss how the Ivy League institution remains agile and open to experimentation, what questions the profession needs to ask today to be prepared for the future, and what the challenges and opportunities are for a university with multiple campuses. She also reveals how she ended up in tech transfer, and what changes she has seen over the past 2 decades working for CTL. Alice, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the invitation to join your podcast.
It is a great pleasure having you, and I look forward to the conversation. To start with, can you give me an overview of CTL and perhaps Cornell more broadly, because you've got quite a few campuses as well?
Yes, sure. CTL is a tech transfer office of Cornell University. Annually, Cornell have a research expenditure of more than $1 billion. And from all its campuses, including its main campus in Ithaca, upstate New York, and 2 main campuses in New York City, while Cornell Medicine, the new campus, Cornell Tech. At CTL, what we do is manage IP, intellectual property from Cornell, and catalyze technology commercialization and promote the formation and growth of startup companies. Right now, we also manage the university gap funding series. So every year we receive over 400 invention disclosures, enter into 70 to 100 licenses and options, and we create over 15 startup companies based on our technologies. And last year, our spin-off raised more than $300 million in funding. So as you can see, as we have many different type of research on different campuses, we have very broad portfolio in our technology, from human health to engineering to IT, and also some in agriculture and veterinary medicine. And also we embrace diverse but very rich ecosystem in both urban and rural environment.
Amazing. We've got quite a few initiatives, so I'm going to ask you a few questions about those. Starting perhaps with Fast Track Startup License, can you tell me why this was created and what the feedback has been so far?
The Fast Track Startup License, we use that as a tool to support new ventures, obviously, right? And we have an experimental approach, right? So we said, maybe let's start it with some places small and see how that goes, right? So we started with engineering and physical science. It's a with the needs of the ecosystem, and particularly with new type of entrepreneurs, how much they feel uncomfortable about how transparent the licensing process is, how fair the terms they receive, how long it takes to negotiate a license, right? So all these things, I think people feel the need to support the new startup process. So with the design, we get a lot of input from the VC community and entrepreneurs and also inventors on campus. So it was released about 3 years ago. And so far in this particular field, engineering and physical science, we already signed 11 licenses using the fast track comparing to the one non-fast track of the startup. It's about like 2-to-1 ratio. So most people really like it. So far, it's overwhelmingly positive feedback, how much they enjoyed it and how much they learned from this and easy it is. And particularly people felt like they felt the way when they plan things for the future, we post everything online, they can study that, they're not nervous about the future when they license it, what they can introduce their potential investors, what type of deal they can get. So with the success, actually right now, we're in the expanding phase of this. You will hear that in the months also, we're going to launch our other series in this fast track. The one in the life science area. So we're going to have some design for medical device and also in biotech tools and diagnostics. And so that's another one coming up. And yet even another one for maybe a software and copyrighted materials without patents. And, you know, there's a theory for that. So we can get a quick fast track as well. So coming soon in just in a month.
Amazing. I think this will probably go out in a couple of weeks. So at that point, we may very well be much closer to that launch as well.
Right, right. Yeah. Expansion show its success, I think. Yeah.
Yes. Among your many other initiatives, you have the McGovern Center, the Praxis Center. You also have Venture eLabs, you have Ignite. Can you tell me a little bit more about these as well?
Yes. I will say all these programs are relatively new, which shows the growing interest of supporting startups and ventures in a community, right? So among these, the one has a little bit longer history is McGovern Center, which is our life science incubator. It started about 10 years ago, has so far accepted more than 25 startup companies. And when they're incubating in this incubator, raised more than $180 million in financing and funding for these companies. And one of their star companies graduated from the incubator is Embark, right? It's a company doing dog sequencing and genotyping. I don't know if you have a dog, you may have already heard about this. It's very popular in dog owners and breeders. So, and recently in their Series B, they got a valuation of $700 million. So one of their successes. Another one, a newer one, the Praxis Center is for physical science, IT, and engineering. That's the very new one. It's only about 2 years old. And right now have seven companies in incubation right now. And one of its stars is Ava Labs, and is in cryptocurrency. Their token, AVAX, although this company is only just a couple of years old, is among the third heaviest traded thing in the crypto world right now. And actually, we're also learning what that means in this new field. And like, you know, anyway, so it's a learning process for all of us. Venture eLab at Weill Cornell Medicine in New York City. That's about 5 years old and has many programs, a competition program, training programs, and our CTL Weill office worked very closely with them. They were involved in most of the startups there. So it's certainly growing presence. And finally, is you mentioned Ignite, which is our gap funding program, which is managed by our office. So this is started maybe about 4 or 5 years ago, but initially relatively small, right? So maybe about $400K a year in funding. This year, we're going through major expansion to $3 million a year.
Wow.
Something we've been hoping for and fighting for in the past quite a number of years. So with this major expansion, it become a theory, right? We have the proof of a concept funding for labs to help the very early stage when the invention is just disclosed and protected. We also have a program for startup when it just formed and in need of a little bit of funding to prove their validation of their product in order for them to raise money. And also there is a brand new program we're launching, which is called Ignite Postdoc for Ventures. This is one is connecting, you know, the lab to the startup and also in training of the entrepreneurs for the future. So extremely excited for this, either expanding of the existing program, but also launching new program in the gap funding series.
From 400K to 3 million, that is an expansion, like that is significant.
Right, right. Certainly with that opportunity comes responsibility. You know, people are saying, okay, we're tracking the result for the future, but then with the existing program, we have a great result. For every $1 we put in, and we got $40 back, either to the funding or VC money. So it's a great result. So that's why people are willing to give us more money, right? And also in terms of the project for innovation and also for startup, you know, for the next stage in reaching the inflection point, we have success rate from 70 to 80% so far.
Wow, phenomenal. I feel like I'm just moving through your initiatives at the moment, but another one that I find quite interesting is the Women's Innovators Initiative. Can you tell me more about what led to the creation of this? And I don't know if you have any numbers about the impact, but if you do.
Mm-hmm. This one we just started last year. I can share with you the number which triggered this, right? We did some analysis of our inventors. Our women inventor rate is about 23%. Our women founders' participation rate in our startups is about 18%. So maybe compared to some other numbers you heard in different places, it's not too bad, but still pretty low, right? So this is one of the things we wanted to start to help women's participation in both invention and also creation of startups. So we only started last year, and also at WILE, there's a program by the BioVenture eLab, there's Women Founders Initiative as well. So all these together is to help more engagement from women, both for the innovation and startup process. So there's various of activities like series and just webinars and events for the women innovator. There are also mentor programs connecting them to women mentors. There's competitions and for business plans. So all these different activities supposed to help them. And also, I mentioned the earlier on the Ignite funding, gap funding we have. We also want to leverage that to help the engagement of women inventors and entrepreneurs, not only women, but also other diversity initiatives in terms of participation about different groups.
How does your own office fare in terms of diversity?
I would say our office right now do have a reasonable diverse working force. We have plenty of women in our office for underrepresented minorities. We also have people in that group in leadership role, and we do have them in various of trainings to grow in their leadership role. So this one, I'm actually very proud now that we're only preaching, we're practice our preaching. So
amazing. That's really good to hear. Cornell also has the Jacobs Technion Cornell Institute. Says how best the name would suggest, I suppose, with the Technion Israel Institute of Technology to drive research, entrepreneurship, and creation of deep tech startups. Can you speak a little bit more about this?
As you know, Cornell Tech is a brand new campus, right, in New York City.
Yeah.
From its inception to its growth to its current form, we're very excited. I also generate a lot of enthusiasm, right, about digital world, about New York City's engagement in the digital age, right? And it has a lot of new concept with the establishment of this campus, right? So it's combining research, innovation, and education and entrepreneurship together in this campus and for the digital age and for the city as well. So for Jacob, it's part of Cornell Tech. Jacob Institute is between Cornell and Technion, as you mentioned. Within Jacobs, I think even among Cornell Tech, Jacobs is viewed as even more place for radical experiment. So to combine research, education, entrepreneurship, one of the things we work probably most close to is one of the program called Runway Startup Postdoc Program. I believe it's the first one in its kind, launching, you know, hiring postdocs to start companies. The technology and business incubation, education and training, everything together combined. And I wanted to say an interesting quote from Tom Cannell. He is the former deputy director of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy. And in one of his talks, he said, okay, this is in addition to the traditional path of training for PhD and postdocs, he called this a third arm of training for entrepreneurial scientists and engineers. Since its inception 2014, 2015, not only they created more than 40 companies, but the training of the entrepreneurs and in scientists, engineers, it really, really has a lot of influence. And actually, this is sort of an inspiration for us. When I was talking about one of the new programs for Ignite, it is postdoc for ventures, right? So we want to transform this model beyond digital to additional hard science and also transform that to many different fields and different colleges and labs. I think it's one of the examples we use as, again, radical experiment and expand and have more impact in other places as well.
As you said, early days, have there been any noteworthy ventures that have come out of the Institute already?
Yes. So I just maybe gave one example from the Runway Startup Postdoc Program. One company called Nanit, it's a smart baby monitor and use machine learning technologies to track baby's sleep pattern and help parents to improve the sleep of their kid. So I think recently the valuation about that is over $100 million, I believe, and certainly products in the market and help many parents already. Yes.
That is amazing. That is a really good example. I like that. I like the dog one earlier as well, but I like this one as well. A lot of experimentation, a lot of expansion. What is working well in Cornell's ecosystem today and what are the challenges?
Certainly, at Cornell, we have multiple campuses in different places. Particularly historically, I would say that it's hard to compete for capital and talent compared to Silicon Valley compared to Boston. I would say in recent years, the ecosystem has been enriched tremendously. Some of the examples we already talked about. We also engage in brand new ways, in very innovative ways to attract and train entrepreneurs. So right now, I do feel like both in upstate New York and also in New York City, and the traction has grown tremendously, and we have seen growth in the funding that we can attract for our startups and also entrepreneurs we can attract for our startups. With that said, for the upstate place, I would say for a company when they raise the later series of funding, many of them still move to California and Boston. So one side, we want the best path for the companies, right? If they need to go, they need to go, right? You do not want it to prevent their growth. You know, hopefully in the future, we can attend more of them. But even when they move out, I would say the entrepreneurship grow within those companies, and it has a lot of return to the ecosystem for the next generation of entrepreneurs for funding. So it's really a lot of enrichment for that. For New York City, I would say it has come to the stage we felt like we can keep many of the companies in New York City ecosystem. That is also a very encouraging sign.
That is an encouraging sign. Do you think that is going to improve as you build up your different initiatives, campuses that are in New York as well?
I would say we hope that will improve. And with that said, we do see there will be still some migration. There will be always level of that. But hopefully they're going to go to some critical mass in the region and for the future. Yeah, we do have a lot of hope. We also, our initiative grow beyond the very early stage, and the initiative between Cornell and also the state and other places, we want to also move to the next stage initiative, maybe to help the company stay in terms of real estate, in terms of the structure to support them and things like that.
Yeah, I imagine, especially in New York City, space is at a premium.
Yeah.
What is your view of New York City or New York State and US ecosystem more broadly? How do you think it compares to international peers?
In terms of the maybe more generally for US, I think it's maybe generally viewed that US has been leading this innovation and maybe venture side for a long time. And first is through this policy point of view in terms of BIDO in early days, and also in terms of the VC community and how many companies have been created historically. I would say in recent years, many other countries have been growing significantly. So that leads maybe the gap is smaller now, or maybe even level few now. With that, and we certainly talk to many people in other countries, in Europe, and then the UK, you know, we talk with our colleagues in other universities, Cambridge and Oxford, certainly, and also in other growing economy and in Asia, in Singapore, India, China. And sometimes the capital and then structural growth and support for entrepreneurship, for new ventures, I would say it's really eye-opening. The level of support get. I think from that and in the U.S. to keep us at the front of the innovation. And so certainly, as it's come to a stage, we all grow together. How to keep us on the leading space together with others certainly need a lot of work. I think the recent pass of Endless Frontier Act may be one of the ways the government, at least how they look into that to keep U.S. competitive. And for people like us in a university tech transfer and in innovation, I think when we think about ways, not only supporting innovation, certainly we need to support innovation in the marketplace in startups, but when we do things, how we ourselves can be innovative in the things we do to support innovation growth as ongoing challenges for ourselves.
Yeah, that makes sense. I did have a question about what your view is of where tech transfer is headed over the next decade or two. So I might just jump ahead to that, or maybe innovation in general. What do you think this will look like in 2030 or 2040?
Yeah, so I think that's probably a question everybody's mind, right?
That's why I'm asking it.
I wish I have a crystal ball. Let me talk about in different levels. In tech transfer, certainly that has been continued changing in the past 20 years, right? So originally, when I started in this career path, it's probably more focused on IP and then maybe on commercialization. And these days, very heavily in supporting startup creation and growth. Now we're also maybe engaged to some level local economic development and also corporate engagement and collaboration and so on and so forth, right? It's really keep changing. The next decade or more, and the startup side, I think maybe two sides, I will see the structure continue changing. One is on the one side of a startup, we've been focusing on startups based on our technologies, technology-driven startups. But how that will maybe play with the general entrepreneurship of the student, you know, training for the future, that's one. And also how that plays with a regional economic development. I think this will be evolving and changing part on the startup venture side. And for the corporate side, you know, historically, we've been playing the place licensing technologies and also some in terms of sponsored research from corporation. But overall, on the research side, how we engage corporations, collaborations, open innovation system, that's another maybe thread as well. I would say that the structure of tech transfer probably will keep evolving. It may not have a silver bullet for same for everyone. I would say different university, probably the structure will evolve differently. I would say based your culture, your research, what type of research, your region, and your pain point. So I would say that probably will evolve in generally broadly, but in exactly what structure to support in diversity may be somewhat different. And also, I would say even the word tech transfer itself, right? We use the word tech transfer. I think it itself is heavily debated what it should be called. And there are many new names has been proposed behind doors. Am I even director to say, you know, it should be called A, B, and C. And it has not been changed. I think it's because people have not agreed on whatever new names this need to be. And so the word tech transfer itself mean many things. It's keep evolving. It's a changing time, but also exciting time for that. And maybe to overall innovation. I think this is maybe less clear, but I am keen maybe on two specific front. One is technology's role in innovation and how to shape up a future economy. On one side, there is this view and many supporting ways of doing that too is technology may be an equalizer in a way what it can provide to different people in those resources and connections and for different population, for different part of the globe. On the other hand, and many people argue technology could be a divider because when you put capital, when you're different, you know, talent in these, what population it's actually engaged to grow the future economy. It could be a divider as well. So as people working in this field, tech transfer is only a very small part of that, I understand. We're all leaning marketplace, certainly. But what role it plays, we need to really be conscientious about this with the different maybe directions and how what role we can play in shaping up how technology influences the general population and also the global economy. I think that's the one higher level of thoughts and we need to be conscientious about beyond our tech transfer. Another thing is probably also at broader level, technology come to a stage that it's shaping up how this society in many aspects is organized and the way how we even view jobs and how we view works for the future, how that impact humanity is also changing, right? So there's certainly this current pandemic has posed such questions on people, how work job means to us in the future, how we're going to be organized together for that, and also fundamentally how we're going to get connected together. Personally, I do not have a clear answer for that, and I'm certainly observing and see how this is going, but I think it's almost certain something will be changed in that. Something will, you know, have dramatically changed maybe in 20 years. I think when we work in technology, we really need to remain very open and humble about this and also really learn from what is could be happening, what is changing, and really remain humble and ready to adapt and support this new future for the overall humanity.
I think you are certainly asking a lot of the right questions. So that's really interesting to hear. I lost my own train of thought there.
Because that's the maybe challenges we all face together, right?
Yes.
Where are we on that path together? But hopefully we're all together in that path, I would say. Yeah.
As you said, you've been doing this for a couple of decades. You've been at Cornell since 2002. You took over CTL in 2014, first as interim and then permanently in 2016. How did you get into technology transfer and why did you join Cornell specifically?
For Cornell, I have a deeper root, actually. I got my PhD at Cornell. I was trained here. This was my home when I first come to US. So it's my alma mater. So with that connection, certainly I have loved Cornell. And after my degree, actually, I was working in a startup company in New Jersey, not too far, right? So that's where I got exposed to IP, fundraising and building products. So it was a very successful experience, actually. After that company, when we moved back to Ithaca and Cornell, that's actually a common modern day phenomenon. It's called a dual career. my husband is a faculty at engineering school, and I want to stay with business, but at the time, and there's not too many startups right now, actually, we're much richer in our startup community. So at the time, we saw to connect to from academia to business and tech transfer seemed to be a natural place for me at that time. So it piqued my interest. I joined and have been really enjoying the journey, and particularly in the past 20 years, as we discussed. So much change in tech transfer, right? Many new initiatives and experiments we're doing. I'm glad Cornell is a place that very open-minded in pursuing these new directions. So it has been a lot of fun thing to do when we broaden our function and be more supportive, more engaged in startups and innovation system.
I certainly can see how an institution's willingness to expand and experiment with initiatives can convince you to stay in a job because, yeah, nothing like getting boring. And
Right. Even right now, actually, even the just past few years, and I mentioned our gap funding, our startup process, the incubators, all in the past few years, right?
Yeah.
we're living in a very exciting time, yes.
Is there anything you would say to someone who is starting out in tech transfer today?
In general, we talked about the field, we talked about innovation, and certainly it's a very inspiring field, but nonetheless, it's keep changing, right? To some people, this is an uncertain past sometimes. So I think people need to have some mindset of growing with this profession. And the best practice you learn today may not be the best practice in 5 years anymore. People that in this field, actually, regardless, young or old, experience or just join a profession, we all need to stay very open-minded. We need to always ready to learn and experiment and really supporting the overall innovation system in your local community and in the country and also globally.
I want that on a poster above my desk. Best practice today might not be the best practice in 5 years. I think that's very profound.
Yes, that's a very important. We all learn from each other. So I think that we're learning here in our profession, you know, with Autumn, also people, LES in the licensing one from the companies, but also from the VCs, entrepreneur community, and also in general, what the world needs, but also in other countries. Like, I actually very happy to see this increasing collaboration and learning across continent with Europe, with Asia, and how to shape the world for the future. Yeah.
I know you've mentioned a few companies over the course of our discussion, Embark, the crypto company as well. Are there any examples of startups that you are particularly proud of, either for impact or financial success or both?
Maybe a couple ones. Pacific Bio with the sequencing and genetic space that right now have a market cap of $6 billion and certainly a successful startup from our engineering school. Another one I want to mention, maybe have a more local impact, is called Kionix. It's for the space of MEMS sensor for cars and other devices. This one is a company started locally and stayed locally and producing all these products locally, have employed hundreds of people, you know, high-paying jobs, and original entrepreneur and CEO donate back to Cornell, become a Cornell trustee, and also mentoring many new CEOs of Cornell startups. So I would say that that one particularly very close to us and to the community as well. And we particularly want to have more examples like that for the future as well.
Amazing. That almost means we are out of time. Is there anything else we haven't covered that you want people to know about Cornell?
I think that's probably the most of the area we already covered. And overall speaking, I would say that it's certainly one of the Ivy League schools, but a very unique one both has its endowed part and also public part, right? And also we have very diverse environment upstate, like rural and also New York City, you know, urban places, but even in New York City, that was while established for a long time with a brand new digital presence for Cornell Tech. So I think Cornell itself, maybe example of, you saw this global places with all very diverse background and environment, and how we approach that together. We're using a very innovative way approaching the future together and very collaboratively as one Cornell, even with a different environment background, but together we want to create the great future for education and research and innovation for Cornell. So I think, you know, given that it's somewhat similar to other maybe big picture of the world with a very diverse environment and history and everything, there with maybe a goal of working together for the future.
I think from our conversation, I think Cornell is in good hands with you. Obviously, you've been there for quite a long time, so I think the university probably agrees with that statement.
I've been working with so many amazing people here, certainly with the leadership, with my colleagues and other people. Many of the program I mentioned is not necessarily CTL, right? We work with so many, a very rich ecosystem, and it's really an amazing place. I think that together, again, we hope to have a better future.
Alice, it's been a huge pleasure to talk to you and learn more about Cornell and CTL. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much again for the invitation. It's really a pleasure talking with you. And I hope to keep this as a pathway to learn more about this practice globally as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Talking Tech Transfer is hosted by me, Thierry Helis. It is produced by Global University Venturing, a Morsonia Limited publication. You can find us at globaluniversityventuring.com, on LinkedIn as Global University Venturing, or on Twitter at GU Venturing. Our sound engineer is Mark Chatterley from In Ear Production. You can find them on inearproduction.com. If you've enjoyed this episode, make sure to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an interview. We'd also really love it if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, or if you share this podcast with your friends and colleagues. It really helps us grow our audience. You can also reach out to me directly with feedback. Just email thehelis@globaluniversityventuring.com. That is thelis@globaluniversityventuring.com. Until next time, have a great week, everyone. Goodbye.